Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the Planning Committee meeting of Tuesday, 31st of May. Are there any apologies?
Chair, apologies from Councillor Bennett, Councillor De Vink and Councillor Montgomery.
The order of business
is as printed in the agenda, Chair.
Are there any declarations of interest? You can make them known now or at the time when we discuss the item on the agenda. Now we go on to the minutes of the previous meeting of the 1st of March for noting, and the minutes of the meeting of the 19th of April for approval. Any comment? We'll now move on to the public reports 5.1. Peter Arnsdorf.
Thank you, Chair. This is a report seeking approval for an amended scheme of delegation for planning matters under which specific types of planning applications are delegated to the appointed officer to determine. Following a review of the planning service, the scheme of delegation needs to be updated to correctly identify the correct appointed officers who are delegated to determine applications. The proposed changes are shown in Part B of the scheme on page 26 of the agenda papers. The proposed updating does not change which applications elected members delegate to officers to determine. The amended scheme would replace the one approved by Council at its meeting on the 24th of September 2013. Amendments to the scheme must also be approved by the Scottish Ministers. It is recommended that the committee approves the amended revised scheme of delegation for the determination of planning applications as set out in Appendix A of this report, and also agree that this amended revised scheme be formally submitted to Scottish Ministers for approval.
If the committee could look at page 29, Annex 2, information for members, and anyone wanting to make any comments, I'll give you a few minutes for.
Chair, just to circumvent the proceedings, I was going to suggest that we hold a seminar on the scheme of delegation. There's a number of new members on here that are on the planning committee that weren't on the committee when in September 2013. So it was just an opportunity for all of us to be refreshed, dare I say, in what the scheme of delegation is, and we hold the seminar and then we can make any further decisions after that seminar. I don't think it's going to make a whole lot of difference for another cycle. I'm just suggesting that, Chairman. Thanks.
Are there any objections to that suggestion? I suggest that that becomes the wish of the meeting. Item 5.2.
Chair, that's just your regular update on the major applications and those that are at the pre-application stage, just for information, unless there's any comments or questions.
No comments. Item 5.3.
Again, Chair, this is your regular update on decisions taken by the local review body, and there's also an appeal decision there to note, unless there's any other questions.
Councillor Milligan.
Chair, there's two questions arising. The first one was regarding an item that came up to the local review body. And this was for the application that landed at Shewington. I didn't take any part in the decision making on that because I didn't go on the site visit. However, there was a question came up when it was revisited by the local review body. And at that time, the question, I think, was around there were some members giving consideration to just refusing to give consent for this, even though a previous local review body had granted consent with conditions. At that meeting, the planning manager advised that that would be acceptable at the time because written verification of planning consent hadn't been granted. At that stage, I did actually speak at the meeting just to say that I wasn't sure that that was the correct advice, and I think the question was then left And Peter, I think you agreed to take it away and discuss with lawyers when indeed a planning decision was taken. Was it at the end of that planning meeting, was that decision taken, or was it when they were notified? Now, I understand we have a right if they didn't meet any of the conditions put down or sign section 75s, we have a right not to issue that. Can you verify what advice you've had on this issue?
Chair, Councillor Milligan is correct. My intention was to actually report back to the Planning Committee with a formal report explaining the issues that were raised. One was about when the decision is technically issued or determined, as Councillor Milligan identified, also about when you can and cannot make representations. So it's on my list to do, so I plan to do that over the summer period and then report back to the Planning Committee rather than the local review body. So I've planned to do that, Chair. As part of that process, I will consult and include legal advice and case law advice so that members have that before them. So that is my plan to do that.
Chair, thank you. The second part that I come to is the planning appeal decision notice. And I'm really concerned that for many, many years, elected members have been raising serious concerns regarding the springing up of hot food takeaways near schools. And as such, there's been quite considerable effort being put into trying to try and had these in abeyance and no have them. Some years ago, when the Stayside site was agreed, I seem to recall that part of that in there was conditions that this wouldn't suddenly turn into a hot food takeaway area because it was so near the school. And I thought we had gave it enough protection. So I was quite perturbed to see, for what I'm reading as a layman, it seems that the appeal notice by the reporter seemed to indicate because we had changed a couple of units into a retail unit that we didn't deem some such protection was required as to the effect on the local retail areas. What I'm really shocked to see is the way that the reporter has simply dismissed any criteria regarding a hot food takeaway being right next to a school. And we're talking about 100 feet for the front door of this school, a massively large high school. There are no conditions whatsoever in opening times to protect the kids. It throws, I think, into complete laughter our healthy eating policies when we can't seem to put any kind of conditions in there at all to try and stop these shops springing up right on the doorsteps of the schools. How has the reporter came to such a conclusion? Is it something that I know the planning officials thought that it was acceptable to put that in here? I disagreed with that at the time and was quite concerned that officers thought that it was okay in any terms at all, being as we clearly have policy supporting encouraging healthy eating within our schools. So can I maybe get a professional view on what this planning committee can do more or what this council can do more? Because I think the elected members have made it clear around the table that they wanted more protection in here. What's happening? What's going wrong?
Yeah, Chair. I mean, it's a difficult one because, as correctly said, the decision was based on the elected members' concern about healthy eating and its relationship to the school in this particular case. But the applicant did take their right to take that to appeal, and then the reporters made a judgment and explained the rationale behind that in the paperwork here. I can't really change or give advice contrary to what the reporters said. That's how they've reached their conclusion. With that regard, the council may wish to consider drafting some supplementary guidance with regard hot food takeaways, which may have additional weight in terms of the assessment of plan applications, and that's most probably the only option I can think of that we could pursue. And if the council was then minded to support or agree guidance on that basis, then planning officers in assessing planning application under delegated authority will use that in the determination of the applications, and then any subsequent refusal could effectively go to local review body. So in regard, the decisions kept locally, as it were. So that's most probably the only way I can think of dealing with that issue.
Could you not show us what we actually said when we granted permission for the retail units, the actual wording?
Yeah, Chair, you'll recall the application came to committee and the date slips from memory at the moment. Then the members determined to refuse the application, and at the time it circulated the reasons for refusal around elected members just to make sure that was a fair reflection of their decision. But if there's additional paperwork you want to see, that's not a problem. We can happily copy your appeal statements or additional information to elected members.
I was thinking, just a minute, Lisa, I was actually thinking about when we gave permission for the retail units right at the beginning.
Yeah, sorry, yeah. Copy of the report and the decision with the associated conditions. Yeah, I can copy that to elected members. Yeah.
Thank you, Convener. Is it not a complete crass failure of public policy when this council and the Scottish Government have both made their intention extremely clear about the importance that Councillor Milligan has just alluded to of healthy eating, of raising our children to be as fit, healthy and able, so we don't see a lot of the health issues that now are beleaguering our health service? Is it not a complete obfuscation of all those policies when we see this kind of decision? And is there not something we can do to appeal to ministers to say, hang on a minute, we have a policy in place here in this council, Scottish Government have policies in place, that if you join up the dots, it seems there's a complete agreement between local government and Scottish Government that this is what we are seeking for our children. We are right behind this, and yet we have this kind of decision that confounds policy, that cannot make any kind of sense, and it's the kind of decision that brings government decisions, local government decisions, and especially planning decisions into disrepute, and then the public say, oh, you can't do a thing, what's the point? That cannot be a proper democratic process, and it's time the dots started being joined up, and we should take a stance against this in this council. Can we not please write to Scottish Government?
Thank you. Ian.
Thank you, Chair. There's a clue as to what we can do to solve this at the top of page 41. I'd like Peter's advice on translating it into plain English. It says here, this is part of the reporter's conclusions, and he says, in terms of the policies of the development plan, there is no clearly established relationship between healthy eating and the location of hot takeaways. Now, that seems a bizarre sentence there, because a clearly established relationship is a fact. It doesn't have to be in a policy. But it does suggest that we can put something into our policies which states that perhaps this council believes that to be the case, because it says, in the absence of such criteria, I cannot give weight to it. So if there were some sort of criteria there that suggested, or at least said that we believed that there was a relationship, then could we use that then in determining an application?
Yeah, Chair, this issue comes up from time to time, and perhaps more regularly, and it relates not just sometimes to hot food takeaways and their location, but other types of use, such as bookmakers, off-licences, public houses, etc. And it's a point that's often well made by many in relation to the planning system. The basis of the planning system, of course, is the particular application for a particular use of a building or other piece of land, is that acceptable in planning terms? And that's the focus of it. And the development plan is the basis upon which you make that assessment. I'm a little surprised at the reporter's references in his paragraph there, because he seems to be suggesting that if there was criteria, then he could take them into consideration. I think it's a wider issue. And in fact, if I may pick up on the point raised by Councillor Beattie, which was running through my mind, I would have thought this is an issue whereby, given the advances in government policy in relation to healthy eating and the importance of that and the whole health agenda, what I would suggest, Chair, is that on the basis of this discussion, I write to the Scottish Government's chief planner and to seek his views, because this is not a new issue, and see what current government thinking is in relation to these sorts of issues being raised through the development plan and supplementary guidance, and the level of support that would be attributed to that by government reporters and Scottish ministers in looking at those development plans and at appeals.
Derek, do you want to say something before I come in?
Yeah, thanks, Chair. Just so I can remind the Planning Committee that about a year ago now, the butcher shop in Pennycook, ScotMed owned it, and they came in with a change of use, and the thinking that I had was that it was going to end up a takeaway. So I called it in, and I spoke against allowing it, to refuse it, and Councillor Anna Montgomery seconded me on that. We both spoke against it, and I think all who were present, if I'm right, it was unanimous by the planning, I'm pretty sure it was, that we refuse it. And following that, the reporter then went out, I think he probably spent about half an hour in the town, deemed it, oh, it's just an empty shop, let's fill it. And once again, we're back to, we knew fine what was going to happen, and that's what's happened. We've now got another takeaway shop in the centre of Pennycook. And it's back to, well, we've got the healthy eating thing, but I think you've got the local democracy side of it, where you get the local councillors are against it. We know that the local feeling within the community is against another shop, because they continually get said, oh, another takeaway, another one in the shop, and that. And I just feel that we should be taking, both the tax on that one, the healthy eating, and about the local democracy side of it.
Democracy deficit.
Yeah.
What I wasn't sure about when I read this report was whether the reporter was arguing that the whole concept of the location of hot food takeaways wasn't a material consideration, or whether he was suggesting that our plan was somehow deficient and that it didn't make any attempt to clearly establish that, maybe that it didn't justify it, that it didn't produce or include evidence to link the location of hot food takeaways to healthy eating. And that the question that Ian, the point that Ian just raised, that sentence there at the top of page 41, in terms of the policies of the development plan, there is no clearly established relationship between healthy eating and location of hot food takeaways. Is he suggesting there, or he or she suggesting, that if we had put more information in there and evidenced that link, that it would have been acceptable and it would have been taken as a material consideration? I'm still no clear on whether that's the case or not.
Russell?
Yeah, I mean, I just think in public policy terms, this is all wrong. I really do, and I can't quite get in the reporter's head about how he accepts it's in its government policy, its council corporate policy. Not just we, a bunch of people around here have decided it's a good policy to have. Corporate policy is to have that intertwined in all that we do. And I just find it incredulous that he's come out and said, well, yeah, that's a fact, but I'm completely dismissing that. I think we should, you know, I totally agree with Councillor Beattie in that we should be writing to whoever that appropriate minister is, because I'm not terribly sure who it would be, although I would think the person that's now taking up planning might be the first port of call. But secondly, and more importantly, I think we should actually be referring this to COSLA as the corporate body as well, because if I remember just a few weeks or maybe longer than that, but certainly within the last month, there was a case in another council where they got overturned, I think through the they were taken to court with regard to a blanket policy about having any type of hot food takeaway, whether it be in a parent shop basis or the the little van that turns up there, and they got overturned on that, and they were found that they had their policy was not fit for purpose. Now, if we are serious about obesity, if we are serious about protecting school children from all the ills of society, then for goodness sake, we've got to be serious when it comes to planning. And I think that that's where the deficiency is. Now, it's nice to say, well, you didn't have the policies there. Oh, yes, maybe not in stark terms we didn't have the policies there that said that's got to be taken into account. But in terms of what this council has done over the years with regard to public policy, I think there's enough there, and I'm sure the planners, obviously, or the planning officer at the time, thought there was enough there to actually say that it should not be recommended for approval. So, you know, in all that case, I think we've done our job. What we've got to make sure of is that the message goes up the ladder, and have that be through COSLA at one point and through the appropriate government minister at another point, and with Ian writing to the chief planning officer, then I think we maybe start to get the message over that planning and obesity have got a part to play in making us a healthier and better society.
Well, I just wondered if Councillor Muir he asked a point of clarity, and I just want, and it deserves an answer. My reading of that paragraph is that the reporters are required to look first and foremost at the provisions of the development plan in coming to their decision, and any other material considerations as a secondary element. I think what the report has done here is to go to the development plan, say, I can't see any particular criteria, therefore I'm not going to give any weight to that issue and I'm just going to make a decision. Where I probably would start to take issue with the reporter, so that's a nice convenient position to be in. However, and I think Councillor Emery's just mentioned this or spoken about this, you try and introduce those criteria and you may have difficulty, or as a planning authority, in getting those approved into an adopted plan. And so the issue, I think, does resolve itself to one of public policy that members are talking about and how the planning system can be more joined up with the overall aims of government in terms of the wider agenda.
OK, can I suggest then that we... Ian will write to the planning officer. I'll write to COSLA and the minister. That will suffice? Yeah? And I'll report back to the committee.
Thank you, Chair. This is item 5.4. This report is regarding a breach of planning control relating to the formation of two dormer windows at 15 Dundas Street, Bonnyrigg, without planning permission or listed building consent. Planning permission and listed building consent were granted in April 2009 for the erection of two dormer windows. However, the dormers as constructed are of a different design and are significantly larger than those granted consent. The applicant applied for planning permission retrospectively in 2011 for the dormers. For those ones that had been erected, this application was refused. The applicant sought a review of this refusal of planning permission in February 2012. After visiting the site, the local review body determined to dismiss the review and refuse planning permission. Following attempts to negotiate the removal of the dormers or discuss alternative proposals, an enforcement notice was served on the owner of the property in April 2015. The notice required the removal of the unauthorised dormers or their replacement with the dormer windows granted in 2009. The applicant appealed the enforcement notice and a reporter appointed by the Scottish Ministers dismissed the appeal and confirmed the enforcement notice, giving the applicant until the 10th of June 2016 to comply with the notice's requirements. It is an offence not to comply with an enforcement notice. It is a separate offence to undertake unauthorised works to a listed building. By way of a verbal update, I can also advise that the property owner emailed me yesterday advising that it is their intention to submit a repeat planning application by the 1st of July, seeking to retain the dormer windows. The owners of 15 Dundas Street, Bonnyrigg, have not complied with the enforcement notice, and as a consequence, this report seeks approval from the committee to report the matter to the Procurator Fiscal as the next step in taking matters forward in relation to the breach of planning control.
Does anyone make a comment here? Derek?
Thanks, Chairman. Chairman, I was kind of baffled to see this report here, and I draw your attention to 3.5 in the report, where it talks about subsequent attempts by planning authority officials to set up a meeting with the applicant's planning agent or the client to negotiate a reasonable timescale to either remove both unacceptable dormer windows proved to be fruitless. There was indeed a meeting with the applicant some 3 or 4 weeks back where the planning manager met with the applicant and myself. This isn't the straightforward story that I think most members were led to believe it was. At the meeting, it was quite clear that this wasn't just a case of somebody going ahead and doing or installing windows that they didn't have consent for. There seemed to be a long-going story between either the agent or the company employed to install these windows. And indeed, the applicant makes the point that he didn't go to all the trouble to apply for planning consent, pay an architect, and then just go ahead and do what he wanted to do. That if he was going to do that, he would have just done that right at the start. So it's not as straightforward. The applicant also made it clear to us that it was indeed him that contacted the council. The council didn't just find out by sheer chance. He contacted the council to tell them that when arriving home, he found that what he had expected to be there wasn't that was there. So, therefore, there's some clear areas here. Secondly, and I think it was accepted by the planning manager that there had been severe difficulties by the applicant in getting information from the agent working for him, and indeed understanding the planning system. He did at the time make the point that he had applied for several changes to his house, all had been done properly, legitimately, and went through normal procedures and had been carried out right. This time there seems to be a great clash between what actually either the agent says or promoted or what the actual builder who installed them finished off. So I think we need to concentrate on the fact that it isn't actually the applicant who's actually caused this. He's perhaps a victim of what's here. At the meeting, I was quite comfortable that when it had finished, that the planning manager had been happy that at least something was going to go ahead and that another application would be coming in. And I'm not quite sure, it says, as the planning manager puts it, that it's going to be an identical application, because I think it was made clear that we would look for it to radically change. And I think, in the way of dormer windows, I think things have changed actually since this was actually put in. There are several options open to us here, and simply referring this to the Fiscal's office would just enhance a serious problem that this couple have had, where they've actually landed with what they didn't really want to have, and they've also been landed with the problem and perhaps the bill to have to rectify that and an even bigger expensive bill in trying to get that back for the company who's put it in. I would ask that we give some consideration other than that to referring this to the Fiscal's office. There are options set out in 4.1 where we could give the applicant an extended period to come forward with something, or to take no further action and allow the unauthorised dormers. That would simply leave the applicant with a headache when he goes to try and sell his house because he has unauthorised and work on that. But I would like to hear what other members had to say, and if there is any response for the planning manager it would be worth hearing. But I think I really need to stress the fact here that this isn't just somebody who's went ahead and had work done that wasn't authorised. As I say, I think he's as much, or that couple are as much a victim here as what the planning system is.
Russell?
If a planning application is going to come in on the 1st of July, I would actually be writing back to the applicant and saying, just do what you've got planning permission for in 2009. Because I can't believe, Chairman, I'll be honest about it, it's a lovely story, that, you know, since 2009 to 2016, we've had a set of windows up there that don't actually meet with what the planning permission that was issued. And I can't quite get my head round when 2012, the local review body at that time took a decision not to support the unauthorised work, and I'll say the word, unauthorised, because at the moment they're actually unauthorised dormer windows, and it's not really, I can't see, it's not really the planning committee's responsibility to get the agent, the applicant, and hopefully the person that carried out the work together to work out how much it's going to cost in compensation terms. That's not the planning authority's role. The planning authority's role here is to make sure that what got its planning permission on a listed building in 2009 is actually adhered to. And I'm can't quite enough, probably it's a question to the planning manager, if the applicant is going to be coming in with another application on the 1st of July, which will be a cost in itself, and a cost if he was to get planning, or if they were to get planning permission for that type of dormer window, why can't they carry out the work on the dormer windows as such and put them right? It's a genuine question, because I can't get my head round why, if you're going to spend money, you wouldn't spend money on what you've got permission for.
I think, Chair, to actually physically put in those dormer windows that have got planning permission, the original grant from 2009, they are significantly different in terms of their size, their position on the roof. So it's quite a substantial construction that's required. It's not a simple case of just adjusting part of the windows. So there's must be a significant cost to that, a lot more than the cost of a planning application. So I think there's a scale of costs there. That's involved in that. I appreciate this is quite a difficult issue in terms of the people involved and the issues and the sensitivity around the building. I suppose one of the reasons why there was a time lag between, you know, the local review body decision and issuing the enforcement notice was because we were trying to resolve it without getting to this formal stage, but unfortunately we were unsuccessful there. I appreciate, as Councillor Milligan said, I think the property owners did have an issue with a particular agent, which I won't name, so I don't think that actually helped at all. So I have a bit of sympathy there. But at the end of the day, in terms of planning legislation and separate listed building legislation, the owners of the property are, in effect, responsible for what happens to their property. And we're in this situation where we do have an unauthorised development, and we need to try and resolve that. I think the applicant intends on submitting a repeat application to retain the structures as is, as what's built. I think the difference in the application that Councillor Milligan made reference to was I think they wanted to outline their set of personal circumstances and the difficulties they had to see whether their elected members wish to give that weight as a material consideration, whether that's as part of a planning committee or as a subsequent another review at the local review body. So I think that's where the applicants wish to go with that. As Councillor Milligan referenced, there are options in paragraph 4. You know, there is an option there to effectively delay for a period of time, which is another possibility for you. It's often interesting, I suppose I see this maybe more than most, that it's not until you push it to this point that things start to move and things start to happen. Unfortunately, they didn't happen a few years ago, but it sounds like the actual applicants are taking this quite seriously now. So the members may wish to consider, rather than referring to the Procurator Fiscal, they could consider just deferring, and because you've got the summer recess, you effectively can defer to August. But I can't give you any guarantee whether that application will be forthcoming in July, but if it is, we'll assess it accordingly.
Thanks, Chair. I'm afraid I agree with Councillor Imrie in this one. I've got many constituents who have applied for dormer windows and been turned down and would love to have got permission to go ahead, and they've had to do without. So they got permission for to put in windows for this and did not carry it out in the way that the permission... So I don't have that sympathy that others might have. So I'm inclined to support the recommendations.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, when I saw it had come up before LRB, I was trying to think, when did this happen? Then I realised it was before I was a councillor and many of us here. So I'm a bit sceptical about the idea about deferring it yet again. Over 4 years is quite a long time to resolve issues of this manner. I'm reminded as well of a recent LRB application. Some of my colleagues here recall the one for the test drilling at Shewington. And the applicant came back and asked for an amendment. And we were quite clear then that we had made a decision. The applicant was obliged to either stick to that decision or not go ahead. And many arguments were made at the time that if LRB makes a decision, then we should stick to it. And I think that if we do anything other than enforce the decision, and I may very well, at that, if I'd been a councillor and on LRB at the time, I may very well have upheld the appeal. I don't know. And looking at myself personally, it's not a huge issue. Now, even if I had been on LRB, even if I had supported the appeal and been defeated, I still would have maintained the position now that we have to respect the decision of LRB at that time, and I too support Councillor Imrie's position.
Thank you, Chair. I think I agree with what Councillor Baxter has said. I think it's difficult for us to kind of look behind the facts too much, because it's not immediately obvious to me how we would know whether or not it is the applicant or if it is this issue with agents or contractors or whatever. And presumably there comes a time where the proper thing to do is to think, well, this was what was given permission for. The situation is that the applicants haven't abided by that permission, and nor have they returned the listed building to the condition that we agreed it for. And as Councillor Constable says, you know, the rules have to be respected by everyone, otherwise those who missed out wouldn't have the same obligation to stand by the decisions. But I suppose the question I have is option 4.4. I don't think this is an issue that has come up certainly before me on a committee like this. I don't really have any information about what reporting these individuals to the fiscal would mean in practice, and so I feel I would be making a decision slightly blinded at the moment, because it sounds on the face of it quite a severe step to take. Is it a severe step to take, or is it really the case that we would, if we took decision listed in 4.4, that would be communicated to the applicant, if they then took remedial action, nothing further would happen? Or I mean, I just think I need to know a little bit more about that, because it does sound quite a severe step.
Yeah, Chair. I mean, what would actually happen in process terms is that if the committee are minded to pursue an action through the Procurator Fiscal, it would involve officers effectively writing witness statements and collating evidence and information, providing it to the Procurator Fiscal, who will look at it with a legal perspective and then make a judgment about whether they seek to bring the matter to a court, where the applicant in effect could be charged and tried and effectively fined, usually for carrying out a breach of planning control. In my usual experience is that they receive first time round quite a low fine, but effectively then said you must now go and resolve the breach, otherwise you come back and face a second fine. There is a period of time or a time lag between a committee decision and preparing the relevant legal paperwork to submitting that information to the Procurator Fiscal. So you're right, if in that process, say that just takes a month for argument's sake, if in that time the applicants resolve the issue, then the council, in my experience, would step back from that formal action on the basis that the actual issue has been resolved. Remember, the actual issue here is resolving the breach of plan control, not necessarily punishing an individual. It's about resolving the breach. So that's what would happen.
Kenny?
Is it possible for us to approve recommendation 4.4, but to add a delay before it's taken, and so to say to the applicant that you have a reasonable time, and if you don't comply, the committee have instructed us to report you to the fiscal?
Yes, Chair. I mean, the committee can amend the recommendations or have a combination of the two of them, so that is an option for you if you wish to take it.
Right, I'll try and sum all this up. Councillor Milligan says that the constituent was badly dealt with the chap he'd hired for the dormer windows. I'm only just saying that, Russell. Just bear with me, please. That may or may not be true. You're saying that the planners said these are unacceptable, these dormer windows, put them in the correct fashion, and that would be the end of the matter. Bob is supporting you in that. And then we come to Ken, who says that we should go to the Procurator Fiscal, although amending it, that there'd be a delay until gives them a chance to sort things out. Yeah? Yeah, okay. Does that sum up fairly for everybody in the committee here?
I'm trying to agree with Councillor Young. I like his idea of having the option of the fiscal there, but to give them a period, amending their recommendation to give them a period. I don't know quite what would be reasonable, 1 month, 2 months, 3 months, something like that.
Kenny?
Thank you, Chair. I'd like to move that, but before I do, can I ask for guidance from the officials? What I'd like to move is that there is a reasonable period of time given. If there's not compliance after that time, that we report them to the fiscal, and I'd like the decision of I'd like that motion to be that this is communicated to the applicant. What I would like some advice on is what is the reasonable period of time that could be inserted into that, what would be a recommendation from officials, with the guidance that I don't want it to be a long time.
Chairman, my advice would be 3 months would be the time period. I think in that period of time you could appoint the relevant contractors and start the work to resolve the breach of plan and control. That would be my advice to you.
I'm uneasy about going to Procurator Fiscal, to be honest with you. I don't think that's a route we should go even near. Kath?
I disagree with Kenny, and I support what Councillor Imrie is saying. The applicants have had a substantial period of time to rectify anything. Just giving them another 3 months, I feel we'd just draw it out even longer. I think we go with the officer's recommendations. Thank you.
Okay, so taking that on board, I would like to move that that the applicants are given a period of 2 months to make the remedy, and if that's not forthcoming, that we would report them to the Procurator Fiscal, and that's why I would like to move.
I'd like to second Councillor Young's motion.
Yeah, I think I'm going to get well beat here, but I'm going to put this forward anyhow. I think that the applicant should be given an opportunity to come back with revised drawings. I'm not 100% certain they're going to be what's in at the moment, but they might be more achievable. And I do make the point, and I think it was well accepted by the planning manager, that they have felt that they've had bad advice and bad leadership with a professional that they thought they could trust. And one of the main issues, for example, that they did give is they were never made aware that they were entitled to come to the local review body to make their case, something that's been fundamental to the review body, that everybody has had an opportunity to come in and state their case. So we'd ask that we consider this and agree to another planning application, giving them the 3 months to bring it forward.
I'll second that. Right, Andrew.
I just support Kath's point of view. I mean, I think this has been going on long enough, and we've got the recommendations from the officers, and I would move that we adopt the recommendations by the officers and take this to the Procurator Fiscal. Yeah, as in stated in the recommendations.
And Russell, you have a motion.
I didn't have a motion. What I did do is I spoke up in favour of where we are, and we have to do something. And I'm quite happy to fall in behind the 2 months, because we still means if they don't actually react to that, then we've got what we've got behind us is the authority to the planning officers to take the thing forward and do what Councillor Coventry's and Councillor Johnson were suggesting.
Correct me if I'm wrong. We've got your proposal as per the document. We have Councillor Young's for 2 months, and we have Councillor Milligan's for giving them a planning application again. So can we have...
It's not clear that all are seconded. Apologies, Chair.
Did you not hear me? Those who support Councillor Milligan's...
Sorry, can I just get a bit of clarity? And I'm sorry for mixing this up here, but there seems to be two issues here. The first one is I'm asking for them to be given a chance to bring forward an amended plan. Should that not be dealt with first? And then it's quite simply a case of, are they given 2 months or are they reported immediately? So should we not do that the easy way? Because certainly if my motion falls or fails, I'll be wanting to vote to give them a period of time.
Is that acceptable then to everybody? Yeah. Okay. Michael, you're confused.
Yeah, that's fine.
Right, so it's just me that's confused then.
Vote for or against Councillor Milligan's.
Okay. Right, so we've got...
Motion
right.
Passed all, and then, yeah, two against the other. Yeah, fine. Could
you do that? Just, as I understand it, what you've agreed is the first vote you want to undertake here is to vote on Councillor Milligan's motion in relation to, as seconded by yourself, and on the basis of that, then go to the second vote, which will relate to the two competing motions in relation to the PF.
I thought maybe you wanted more discussion on what you had said, Derek. Okay. Well, who supports Councillor Milligan's... And now, Councillor Young?
No, just again.
Okay, we shall move on.
So it's the substantive vote now, which is the motion. I don't know how you want to do it as a motion or amendment, but I would, as I understand, the first motion was put forward by Councillor Young and seconded, and this relates to the reporting to the Procurator Fiscal, but subject to a 2 month delay to give the applicants a chance. So that's the, and the amendment is the one that the committee follow the recommendation in the report. I presume you want to take the amendment first on that one, Chair.
Yeah. Who supports Councillor Young? Okay, amendment first then. That's yours, Kath.
Yeah, Chair, this would be to go straight to the Fiscal without any delay.
As per the document.
As per the recommendation in the report.
Councillor Young's motion now. Well, thank you for that. We shall move on.
Thank you, Chair. The next item, 5.5, is a report regarding a pre-application consultation for a proposed residential development on land at the Roslyn Lee Hospital site in Roslyn. Two pre-application consultations have been submitted, one for the redevelopment of the former hospital building and a second for enabling development in the grounds of the hospital. The Roslyn Lee Hospital building is a Category C listed building. The purpose of this report is to afford members the opportunity to make comment on the proposals at this early stage of the planning process, in line with the guidance reported to committee in May and October 2014. The applicants are currently engaging in a public consultation exercise, which included a public event being held on the 26th of May. The site is identified as being in the countryside, but with the potential for conversion and redevelopment in the adopted local plan. This position is reaffirmed in the proposed Midlothian local development plan, as the site is identified as an additional development opportunity. The report outlines a provisional planning consideration with regard to the adopted local plan. However, it is worth noting that this consideration is based on the indicative information available at present. A detailed assessment of any proposal will be made once a planning application is forthcoming. It is recommended that the committee notes the provisional planning position set out in the report, that any comments made by members will form part of the minutes of the committee meeting, and that the expression of a provisional view does not fetter the committee in its consideration of any subsequent formal planning application.
I would like to say it's a particularly attractive building and it's a particularly attractive part of the country, so I would hope the developers would be very conscious of what they're doing with that building. Okay, we'll pass that then. Item 5.6, Peter.
Thank you, Chair. This is an application for the erection of 33 dwelling houses, 12 flatted dwellings in a three-storey block, and associated landscaping, roads and car parking on parts of plots C and D at Hopefield, Bonnyrigg. At its meeting of 19th of April, the committee deferred consideration of the application so that the applicant can progress a number of matters across the wider Hopefield development site. These issues are outlined in the report. The site is allocated for housing and is located within the built-up area of Bonnyrigg, where there is a presumption in favour of appropriate development. The principle of residential development on this site is established by its allocation for housing within the adopted Midlothian Local Plan 2003. This position was reaffirmed by the site's continued allocation in the Midlothian Local Plan 2008. The site forms part of the wider Hopefield development located to the south side of Bonnyrigg, the majority of which has been built or is under construction. The application site is one of three residential development areas awaiting a detailed planning permission. The scheme itself is compatible to the adjoining dwellings under construction and the wider site in general. The houses are of contemporary design and will comprise a mix of materials, but will be predominantly render finished. A previous legal agreement has secured contributions towards affordable housing, education and borders rail. The affordable housing provision is made by way of commuted sum equal to 10% of the total number of residential units to be built. Since the April committee, the applicants have begun to progress the issues which were raised by the committee at its meeting in April, and again, these are outlined in the committee report. There have been no representations, and the recommendation is to grant planning permission subject to conditions.
Thanks, Chairman, and thank you for your support and the committee's support and delaying this for a short period of time until we try to get some of the issues resolved. in the affordable housing that was related, as we can see, that seems to have been agreed. The quality of the central open space, it appears from the letter we have from Taylor Wimpey and communication for the local residents association, that some of the small areas of the community open space, which known as the kickabout area, were going to be improved, and that some work would take place there to improve them. I did note when I visited the site that Burnbury Primary School were going to be using it for running that and for the races for the sports day, so I can only take it that has been upgraded somewhat. Certainly if we're walking over it, it still looked quite, I'd say a bit of work needing done in the outside of it, but in general it certainly seemed to be a bit better. The playground, as I talked about, we can't have it continually be shut down for lengthy period of times. It seems to be the only playground in that area, although when I first seen the master plan, there seemed to be many sort of small play areas which seem to have disappeared. One of the areas I'm looking forward to the seminar and delegated decision making is to find out how we seem to agree master plans with these things, and then the chop and change. I think this was something that raised its head with one of the local review body decisions for on a condition that was chopped and changed no long ago, where the local review body agreed one hang, or the planning committee agreed one hang, and officers went away, seen them as minor changes and agreed them. So I'm no sure. I would still like to see that coming into the council's ownership. Certainly in the kickabout areas, and I'll touch your name on the sports pitches. These were areas identified in the local plan, and they weren't just identified as an off-sale, or we think we need them for the area. They were seen during that local plan and identified by Sports Scotland that continuing to build as we were would put a great pressure on local facilities such as sports pitches and that. And it was always my thought, and certainly if you take for example the bowling green down there was going to be replacing the one we were shutting at Bolton Hall, there's no doubt in whatsoever in my mind that this was going to come over to the council, yet here we seem to have went down a section 75 route that we've no taken that control. So I'm not sure how we had intended to do that, because I can remember the negotiations some years back where effectively, Taylor Wimpey were saying, well, here's the space to put the bowling green and the football facilities in. However, it's up to use to do that. Now, some negotiations by Ian Johnson there got that swung round to where Taylor Wimpey have put them in. Now, I'm going to say they've done a really nice job of it. You go down, the pitches look lovely, the goals are up. The only problem is nobody can book them and nobody can use them because Scottish Woodland didn't have a facility to take bookings, etc. And indeed, I'll refer to my previous comments, the bowling green was a replacement for the one at Polton Hall next to the Stayside and was going to be used in the same way by sport. I've always, and I think this committee has always been of the belief that this would be transferred over. So I would say that this has to be part of this, that the sports and the kickabout areas are transferred over to the council. And I think that's critical to us and agreeing this. And I'm not going to oppose this today, but I'm going to put down the marker that I would expect these to come over to council ownership and very strongly put that marker down. The allocated retail site, I see there's some movement being spoken about there, and it looks quite hopeful that we now might have an applicant who wishes to build maybe not a unit as big as what it's already got planning consent for, but a reasonable sized unit that would see what's known as the neighbourhood centre starting to raise for the ground. So hopefully that'll happen sooner or later, and it's great to see that there's a commitment there by Taylor Wimpey to bring in that bringing that forward, and I look forward to seeing the details of that when it does come forward. The area of the bridge, and I can stand to be corrected on this, but when you look at the plans and you look at the master plan for the area, this bridge was to link up the pathways from one side of the estate to the other side, and indeed I think was seen as part of the cycleway. So I am kind of confused there. So in the response I have for I think it's Peter, you say that they're going to come forward with some designs in that. These designs, of course, should be as such as that it could be a continuation of the existing pathway through / cycleway, and it should come up to an adoptable standard as part of that cycle and pathway to be adopted by the council. I see through the advertiser that Taylor Wimpey have agreed to upgrade the broadband, and that's to be welcomed. And education contributions, I would imagine, will be negotiated at Section 75 level, and I'm sure that the council will have its aim with that. So with that in mind, it would be my intentions today not to oppose this application, and thank the officers and for Taylor Wimpey and the Residents Association for working with us to try and resolve some of these issues here.
Ian.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, I'm like-minded with many of the comments that Councillor Milligan's made, particularly the Neighbourhood Centre. Glad to see progress on that. On the broadband issue, I'd just like to record my thanks to Taylor Wimpey for going ahead with paying for the upgrade to Cabinet 56. I'm trying to find out at the moment, but it's looking like another cabinet's going to be needed in that area, and I believe Openreach are working on what might be another cabinet off Sawmill Terrace off Burnbrae Road. Just to make members aware that just because a cabinet has been upgraded doesn't mean to say everyone can get fibre broadband. So we may get representations from people who are making complaints that they can't get it, even though it's been upgraded. The reason for that is that I think each cabinet holds something like about 500 connections, but when they build a fibre-enabled cabinet next to it, then it only has a maximum of 288, or in the smaller version, 128 connections. So once that's filled, the remaining people, if they ask for broadband, then they're told that it's on a waiting list. I don't think we can go back to Taylor Wimpey or to any of the developers and say, look, you know, we want you to fund extra cabinets because these people, although they can get broadband, they can't get super fast broadband because they arrived late, for example. But it is just something we need to be aware of, and something I think we should apply pressure as a council to Openreach to make sure that they put in more cabinets where they're needed. It's particularly the case in Midlothian because we don't have, as yet, I understand, Virgin Cable, which would take up some of the slack because Openreach or BT assume that not everybody is going to want broadband. That's why they do this. It's particularly a problem in places like Hopefield where you get a development with reasonably high prices. People are coming in, they can afford to buy broadband, and that's what they will be looking for. So it's just something to be aware of. But generally speaking, yes, I'm pleased at the amendments which have come forward in this application, and like Councillor Milligan, I'll not be opposing it.
Well, as a third ward member, I better say my bit too. I missed the original meeting, I wasn't able to attend that, but pleased to see the progress in this, because the people of Hopefield have been living in a building site for many, many years. It was due for completion long, long before this time. Obviously, the downturn of 2008 has had its effect, but I really see an end of construction vehicles in the Hopefield area would be very welcome for the residents.
Chairman, it doesn't look like there will be any opposition to this, so I'm not going to speak any more on that, but what I would ask officers to come back to us on, Polton Hall Community Council raised other issues from it and perhaps an update for them. Some time ago, there was a an attempt by Portland Hall Community Council to argue for a Pelican crossing on the Rosewell Road. And I can remember distinctly officers coming forward and saying that as part of this development, and I'm not sure why, but as part of this development, that a Pelican crossing would be put in on Rosewell Road, just up for the corner of Portland Avenue Road. And there was also supposed to be, at that stage, a path coming through the back of Skelty Muir to the rear of the Skelty Muir housing estate and the nursing home, right up through onto Rosewell Road as a main way for the youngsters to get back and forward to school. So I would take it that would be why it would be just penny just dropped. That was meant to be the main routes to school, but other areas were developed prior to that to allow Burnbury Primary School to open. Could you possibly come back to us as to what's happened with that, this, when we can expect to see it, who will deliver it, because I think there's land ownership issues in there as well, and a timescale if that's possible.
Okay, anybody else got any comments to make? Well, thank you very much for your attendance, and sorry for my brief confusion there in the middle of the meeting.